Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast. I'm Jamie Lee Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quit lit authors, and sober heroes. Hi and welcome to the show. And if you were lucky enough to attend the Mindful Drinking Festival in London, wasn't it an amazing event? You know, absolute respect to Laura Willoughby from Club Soda for just putting all that together and her amazing team. I loved the event. I thought it was just incredible. I was very lucky getting to interview some amazing authors. Catherine Gray, author of The Unexpected Joy of Being Sober. I thought she was just great. Loved interviewing the guys from Rock Sober. What an inspirational story. And it was great to be able to chair the panels that we had there as well, with interviewing people discussing Dry January and what happens beyond Dry January and how we can make the change last. And I thought it was great advice from Laura, saying that, you know, if you are at this stage, then actually think of doing a 90-day challenge, or 90 days, 100 days, and then you can really let the new habits kind of bed in, really. And what an amazing array of drinks. The choice of non-alcoholic drinks, it's totally rocking. Everything from kombuchas and amazing artisan tonics to loads of non-alcoholic beers. I think there were over 50 there, I think Laura had said. And there's wine and there's cider and there's fizz and, you know, just amazing. And of course, you know, it was one thing we discussed in the panel. Opinions differ greatly on whether you should replace, if you like, your booze with a non-alcoholic version. You know, I think it really depends on the individual. And I'd love to know what works for you. I mean, personally, I really want to be able to have a nice drink like a grown-up, you know, if I go out. Just as Laura said when I interviewed her, you know, I want to stand alongside other grown-ups being offered the expensive wine. And, you know, we're the second-class citizens, it would appear, because we're just offered kind of water or the warm orange juice that you pour yourself. And we know that Laura is really campaigning hard for change in this arena. So I think over time, you know, maybe in a year when I'm doing this podcast, it'll be a really, really different story in the UK and internationally. It'd be great if that happened, wouldn't it? It's great to see your self-care, sober self-care tips coming in, by the way. So do please keep them coming. I am going to get to my guest, by the way. But just briefly to say, follow me on Instagram if you're not already, at Janey Lee Grace, J-A-N-E-Y. And use the hashtag Stay Dry Till July, because we really want to focus on the positive benefits of going alcohol free, of cutting down, of being sober curious, and just doing that over a longer period of time. And self-care is absolutely the key, you know, doing those things to look after yourself. So my guest today, we get there, is the lovely, inspirational Claire Pooley, author of the Sober Diaries. Now, many of you know that I'm a presenter on a BBC station in the UK, and we interview lots of celebs and lots of authors. And I was given Claire's book to read up on before she came in on the show to be interviewed. And I can honestly say that that was the catalyst for my change. I knew that I needed to cut down on the booze, but it just felt totally impossible to me. I didn't have a clue where to start. And I was also really terrified. I felt like I was the only person that this had ever happened to. I certainly couldn't have imagined, that life could be better. And in Claire's book, she kind of lived through all the highs and all the lows, and she shared all of that. And she made it all just feel possible. And of course, we know that the book has gone on to be an incredible success. So enjoy this interview with Claire Pooley, and I'll be back with a self-care tip. I'm so pleased that my guest is Claire Pooley, the wonderful Claire Pooley, author of The Sober Diaries. Claire, thank you so much. Thank you so much for being my guest. Your book was the thing that changed everything for me. It really changed everything for me. And you must hear that a lot. So welcome, and tell us how it all started for you.
Thank you, and a happy new year. Well, it started quite a long time ago now, actually. It was nearly 4 years ago when I realised that my glass of wine at the end of the day to wind down had got slightly out of control, and it was more like a bucket of wine by this stage. And it was, you know, I never I guess I never really felt that drunk. I just needed more and more alcohol to unwind. So actually, I got to the stage where I was drinking a bottle of wine every evening, and you know, more at weekends if I was going out. So probably two bottles, you know, on a Saturday and a Sunday. So that all adds up to. And I have to confess, I never added it up until after I quit. But it was about 10 bottles of wine a week, which, you know, is way above the government guidelines, obviously. So by that stage, I was in a bit of a bad way, and it was having a huge impact on my mental health and my physical health. And I wasn't sleeping. I was anxious a lot of the time. I was very overweight. My whole life felt like I was a bit stuck in a rut. And it suddenly struck me that all of those things had something to do with the amount of alcohol I was drinking.
Mm. Did it feel slightly scary at first, the idea of giving up?
Because
I know for many people, you know, they kind of think, this is too hard. I'm not going to be able to do this.
Yeah, I mean, I thought my life would be over pretty much when I gave up. And, you know, but I thought, well, this is something I have to do for my family. I have to do it for my kids. But it's not going to be any fun. And I'm not going to have fun ever again. I mean, that was really how I felt. And I'm partly because, I don't know about you, but I sort of define myself partly by my love of booze. You know, I was a
party girl.
Yeah. I grew up with Ab Fab and Sex and the City and all of that sort of, you know, drinking cosmopolitans and bottles of Chablis, and you know, and that was me. So I thought, you know, who am I going to be if I'm not the person that drinks lots?
And how did you go about starting then? I mean, I think I'm right in saying that you just literally stopped and white knuckled it, you know, as the expression goes, and then started writing as almost a cathartic exercise.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I'd stopped before for a number of weeks. I'd done Dry January a few times, and you know, and the problem was I always ended up starting again, and I'd be quite quickly back to where I was before. So however much I'd tried to moderate, I just couldn't. And what made the difference this time, I think, was finding a community. It's a really difficult thing to do on your own. And, you know, for me, I found that community via my blog. So I started this time, as soon as I stopped drinking, I started writing. And it was like therapy for me. It was, you know, it was like writing a diary, but just online. And I wrote every single day. And if I didn't write, I felt sort of anxious and antsy. And as soon as I, you know, blogged, and just press send, you know, I felt more relaxed. And I didn't initially think that anyone much would read it. You know, I think, you know, start with, I remember looking and thinking, God, there's 3 page views. And I realized it was just me.
Checking.
But, you know, within a year, I'd had over 1 million hits, which was amazing.
So this is the blog, Mummy Was a Secret Drinker. And you know, as you say, just amazing that you find like-minded people reading this stuff. But the whole mummy thing is a big one, isn't it, in this scene? Because, you know, we know that certainly in the UK, the kind of culture around drinking, you know, it's impossible to get away from it. But I think particularly for mums, there's this thing of, oh, I'm absolutely knackered, you know, the sun's gone over the yard arm, I must have a glass of wine. It's become so prevalent, so linked to being a mother.
Yeah, and I think what happened is there was a stage where everybody felt like they had to be the perfect mum. And, you know, this was, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago, there was this sort of this need for everybody to present this perfect face. And then there was a bit of a backlash. And it was like, look, you know, we all started confessing to each other that motherhood was really hard and it's sort of exhausting and it's fabulous, but it's also tough. And our reward was having a large glass of wine. And that sort of, when social media sort of took off in a big way, you know, we all encouraged each other, I think, to sort of, you know, have mummy's little helper at the end of the day. It was our reward. It was our way of sort of congratulating ourselves. And I bought into that big time. Yeah. And the problem is that, you know, we all start doing that, and then when it starts going wrong, because alcohol is horribly addictive, which so many, I didn't really understand, but it is an addictive drug. And so when it does go wrong, then you feel horribly ashamed and you feel like you're the worst mother in the world. So you go from being encouraged to drink wine as part of motherhood to being shamed for having done it, which is a really tough position for a lot of women, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. So you started writing your blog and you started to get, you know, a lot of followers on your blog. What were the early days like for you? How, you know, because it's a difficult area, this one, isn't it? We kind of want to encourage people to do this thing and we want to tell them all about the benefits, but we can't, you can't actually pretend that it's not tough at the beginning. You know, I mean, obviously I read your book and I really resonated with the fact that you very much talked about the fact that you were feeling a bit better, but you also had some really down days, didn't you, at the beginning?
Yeah. I mean, it is hard because, you know, it's mentally and physically hard. I mean, physically your body is, as you know, being used to the dopamine hit that you get from alcohol, and you've been used to using it to de-stress and all sorts of things. So you have to get used to not having the alcohol, you know, physically. But there's also that sort of whole psychological thing where, you know, I'd spent 20 years or more, you know, with alcohol a really prevalent part of my life. And so when you stop, it leaves a big hole. Yeah. And you sort of have to find something else to do to fill that gap, because, you know, to start with, you feel slightly lost. You know, I would go to parties and, you know, I feel like I was on a different wavelength from everyone else. You know, you read Harry Potter. You know those ghosts.
You're one of the Dementors.
Not the Dementors, but the sort of, you know, the like headless Nick.
Oh, okay.
they're there, but they're not really part of, you know, they're not on the same wavelength, because they're not in the same dimension as everyone else. I felt like that for quite a long time.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's not easy to start with.
Yeah. I mean, this is very interesting, isn't it? And also the how you relate to other people. I mean, I think it's really interesting that one of the things that I found, and I can't remember from your book whether it's exactly the same, was this almost sense of shame. I didn't actually tell anybody. I didn't tell anybody for the first month, I don't think, apart from you. I think I told you because you inspired me. But I didn't tell anyone else. I mean, I don't know what that's about. This shame thing is very weird.
You know, I didn't tell anyone else either. And in fact, I did a whole TED talk on the shame, you know, associated with drinking, because I think it's a really big issue. And the reason we feel such shame is because, you know, alcohol is the only drug that you have to justify not taking. You know, you stop drinking, you stop smoking, and everyone goes, yay, well done, you're so clever and brave and wise. And you stop drinking and they go, ooh, you know, did you have a problem? And they sort of assume that you spent your evenings in a skip with vomiting. I mean, it's sort of, so there's a massive amount of shame involved. And I that's why I blogged anonymously. So I used the pseudonym Sober Mummy, and I didn't come out as such for about 2 years until just before my book came out, which was terrifying.
I actually did tell somebody just before Christmas that I hadn't seen for a long while, and it was sensational. Her response was, oh how lovely, are you trying out? Well, I hope so.
And you know, they're sort of dying to hear the really sort of rock bottom stories, in a way, you know. So there is this slight voyeurism sort of involved.
But that's another interesting point, isn't it? Because I think one of the things that I've learned is that, you know, we're all very, very different, of course. And obviously there are some people who are absolutely rock bottom, and they are totally at the end of that spectrum and you know, really, really sick. And then there are other people who are maybe at the other end, maybe allegedly high bottomed, how I wish, you know, but and it's not so much of a problem. But there are many different areas of grey, and I think that's something I've learned. I don't think I knew that before. I think people tend to think, oh, problem with alcohol, you're an alcoholic, meaning low bottom in the gutter. But actually, we now know, don't we, that there are many different shades of grey along that path.
Yeah, it's a spectrum, you know, like any addiction. It's a spectrum from, you know, perfectly happy drinker right down to rock bottom. And you know, I was somewhere on that spectrum, and I knew that it was gradually getting worse. But, you know, it was a very, very slow progression. So, you know, it creeps up on you really, really gradually. And just because you don't fit that archetype of the rock bottom alcoholic, doesn't mean that alcohol isn't causing you some problems, and doesn't mean that you might not be much happier without it. And I think, you know, the term alcoholic is a really dangerous one in a way, because, you know, I felt that if I was to quit drinking, that I would be labeled with this term and I would be told I had a disease and that I was never going to be cured and that my life forevermore was going to be confined to drinking sweet tea in church halls and saying, my name is Claire and I'm an alcoholic. And I didn't want to do that.
No.
And the truth is, you don't have to. You know, I never call myself an alcoholic. I say I was addicted to alcohol and now I don't drink. Mm-hmm. So in the same way that I was addicted to cigarettes and now I don't smoke.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's no need to, you know, you don't have to fit the stereotype. You don't have to accept the labels and, you know, you don't have to get to rock bottom. In fact, I really suggest you don't get to rock bottom.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, let's just talk for a moment about that, about this concept, truth, that alcohol is addictive. It seems so ridiculous when you say it, but like you, I don't think I really quite knew that. I thought it was me that was the problem. I think it's a huge change in mind shift, isn't it, when you finally realise, actually, you know, it's not you. You still do have the power, you know, to be all of who you can be. It's the alcohol. And it's funny because I think you might have heard me say, but I went to something at my kid's school and the whole discussion was around alcohol and alcohol awareness. And the discussion was, should we give children of a certain age, you know, 13, 14, a drink of wine with dinner to get them used to it? To get them used to it. And, you know, I couldn't stop myself from saying, but hold on, let's just swap the word for a minute. Let's swap the word for another addictive substance. Would you give your child just a small glass of heroin to get them, a small piece of heroin to get them used to it?
Exactly.
You know.
And it's historical.
Yes.
That's all. It's because alcohol has been around for so many centuries that, you know, we see it as being different from any other sort of drug, but it isn't. And there was a study in 2010 by this chap called Professor Nutt, who you probably heard of. He was the government drugs advisor for a long time. The government asked him to look at all the drugs available, illegal and illegal, and classify them so that, you know, by amounts of harm that they did to people and society. And the idea was to reclassify A, B, and C. So, and what came out was actually when you look at the harm that drugs do to the individual, alcohol is the fourth most harmful drug available after heroin, crack cocaine, crystal meth, and then it's alcohol. So it's more harmful than nicotine, it's more harmful than MDMA, it's more harmful than regular cocaine. You know, I mean, it does a lot more damage and it's much more addictive than we think it is. And if it was on the market today, and any scientist would tell you that if alcohol came onto the market today, it wouldn't be legalized. We go, hey, no way. And we certainly wouldn't give it to our kids.
No, absolutely. And the whole link with, I know you mentioned earlier that you found that you had anxiety before you stopped drinking. Mm. And I mean, I was amazed to find the link between mental health and alcohol is, it's totally entwined. It's something like 80% of people with mental health issues are drinking too much alcohol, and those who are drinking too much alcohol have mental health issues. We don't know which came first, the chicken or the egg, do we?
Yeah.
And isn't it interesting how intrinsically linked it is?
Well, it's funny because it's a vicious circle, because I thought alcohol made me less anxious.
Yes.
You know, when you first have that glass of wine, you think, whew, you know, I feel much better.
Well, you think it's relaxing you. That's why mummies go for it, isn't it? Because we think it's going to make us relaxed at the end of a stressful day.
It makes you more anxious. So the more anxious you get, the more you drink to calm the anxiety, and the more anxious you get. So, you know, it becomes a vicious circle. It's the same with sleep. You know, you have problems sleeping, so you have a glass of wine, and then you have more problems sleeping. So, you know, because you get to sleep initially, but then you wake up at 3 a.m. So in so many ways, the things we think alcohol helps, it actually makes worse. It's incredible how many effects it has on us.
Once you were fully on your path, as it were, and you were blogging, and you were, I don't know, let's say 6 months or whatever into it all. Because we read about the fact that people have a pink cloud, you know, they feel great for a while, but then often there comes a low after that. Was there ever a time for you when you thought, actually, do you know what, I'm just going to go back to drinking, or to relapse, as the expression goes? Did you have a sense of, I'm going to relapse?
Yeah, I mean, quite a few times, actually, because it's a roller coaster, the whole thing. And, you know, and your brain is so conditioned to, when something goes wrong, you think, oh, I need a drink. And when something goes really right, you think, yay, I need a drink. You know, I mean, it takes a long time to retrain those things. So, you know, 8 months after I quit drinking, I got breast cancer, for instance. Yeah. And, you know, if you told me in the old days that I would have gone through that diagnosis and treatment without alcohol as a crutch, I would have thought you were completely crazy. But actually, luckily, by then I'd realized that even though having a drink initially might make me feel better, that the downsides of going down that path were so huge that it just wouldn't be worth it. And, you know, if I had started drinking again at that point, I know that, you know, I would have cried in front of my kids. I would have found it much, much more difficult to stay calm. I would have been much more anxious. And, you know, as it was, the best thing I possibly could have done was not drink through that time.
Yeah.
And it's amazing how many of the medical professionals said to me, you know, after
go went home and have a glass of wine.
Go and have a large gin and tonic. And it's like, oh, God.
I know. I tell you what, I bet you I bet you felt really proud of yourself when you went back for a checkup and they, how many units of alcohol do you drink? None.
Yeah,
that must feel really good.
Do you find as well, one thing I love is if I go past a police robot where they're breathless.
You want to be stopped.
Have you had a drink? I said, not for 4 years, officer.
Well. I think in your book, you wrote a really lovely piece that I've seen other people kind of pick out about relapsing. Can you just sum it up for us? I can't remember exactly what it was, but you described that, you know, that it's much something along the lines of, is it like a tunnel or something? And you say it's just so much harder, the obstacle course.
Oh, the obstacle.
Yeah. A lot of people have picked up on that. You might not know. And have said, wow, it made such a difference. When I was thinking about relapsing, I went and reread that little piece that Claire had written and thought again. Can you remember it?
It started off as a blog post, actually, and it's been shared, you know, hundreds of thousands of times, actually. And it was just the way that I started thinking about the journey that I was on. That sounds sort of, you know, it sounds very American, doesn't it? but the idea that what I had in my mind was that, you know, I had spent a lot of time in this field, which had gradually got more and more uncomfortable. So it started off, you know, beautiful, lots of fluffy bunnies and beautiful flowers, and the sun was shining and there were rainbows and it was lovely. And over time, it got more and more and more miserable. So it started raining and thundering and lightning, and I was cold, and everybody started leaving, and it was really dark and depressing. And I knew, because somebody had told me, that there was this beautiful field somewhere far away where it was just like my field used to be, loads of bunnies and sunshine and beautiful. But to get there, I had to go over this obstacle course. And the obstacle course included, you know, huge sort of 6-foot walls and tunnels filled with leeches. And it was really tough. And so I would throw myself at that obstacle course with sort of huge determination. I think, I am going to get to that field. And I do about 3 obstacles. And I think, God, this is exhausting. This is really miserable. It was much better off where I was in my field. And I have no proof that this field really exists, you know, so I have to keep throwing myself these obstacles. I don't know how long this obstacle course is. I don't know how long it's going to take me to get to this field. And I don't know what it's like when I get there. And so I would give up and go back to the beginning. And I would do this over and over again, not realizing that actually, if you just keep going, the obstacles get fewer and further between. And you, that field does exist. And when you get there, it is brilliant. But you just have to believe that it's there, and you just have to keep going. Otherwise, what ends up happening is you do that difficult bit over and over and over again, and you become exhausted and demoralized. And, you know, it takes about 100 days to get to that other field.
Yeah.
So you just have to keep going for about 100 days, and then things start looking brighter and more achievable, and everything gets much, much easier. Mm. But if you stop, part way, you just have to start all over at the beginning again. So yeah, so that was the obstacle course story, and people sent me messages the whole time saying, "I'm in the field with the bunnies."
So what for you then was, what do you find from people that that follow you, is the biggest challenge? I know there are lots of challenges, but what's the one that constantly you find yourself saying to people, "Don't worry, it'll be okay. You will get through it."
I think one of the biggest challenges we all find is other people, actually.
People with stupid attitudes, yeah.
Yeah. So, it's that fear of, will my relationship with my partner ever be the same? Will I ever be able to go to a party and have fun? What do I do when people say, "Why are you not drinking?" So it's, you talked about it earlier, but it's the whole shame thing. And, I think if one thing, even if you're listening to this and you're just doing Dry January, or you don't, you're not even quitting alcohol at all, you're just moderating, whatever, one thing I would ask is that if you come across somebody who has quit drinking, give them a big hug and say, "Congratulations, you are a total superhero," because nobody does that. Yeah. And well, very few people do that. So actually, if you're listening to this and you have quit, well done. Have a virtual hug and you are a total superhero. Yeah. And I think if there was more of that, it would be much, much easier.
Do you think the culture will change? Do you think we're getting there? I mean, we know that we've seen even just in this last year, a massive increase in the UK in alcohol-free drinks that have come onto the market. Events like the Mindful Drinking Festival that we're both part of. It feels that there's something of a paradigm shift. It feels as though there's something in the air, doesn't it? I mean, you're right, you're right. You're really ensconced in it all. Does it feel to you that as though within a year or two, you almost wouldn't be having this conversation because it'd be so obvious?
Yeah, no, it's definitely changing. And if you look at the statistics, you look at people under the age of 30, actually under 25, and nearly a third of them don't drink at all, which is a massive change. In my day, when I was at university, I didn't know one single person who didn't drink.
No.
Which is very different now. So so things are definitely changing. And I think there is increasing awareness of, as our generation, the women and men that grew up with AbFab and all of, all of that sort of culture, as we get older, and we start seeing what impact that is having on our lives, we're talking about it. So there is much, much more awareness and of what life might be like without the alcohol. So yeah, it is changing, but it's slow. It's slow.
So what's next for you? You've now got the paperback version of the Sober Diaries out. You must be thrilled at the success of it. Was it a surprise for you?
Yes, it was actually. And, the best thing for me has been all the messages I've received over the last year. I mean, I've had thousands and thousands of emails and messages from people via social media saying, as I felt when I was I thought I was the only one. Mm-hmm. And actually just, hearing the story of somebody going through the same things that you're going through makes a big difference. And, I think, you remember at the Golden Globes, Oprah Winfrey said, the most powerful thing we can do is to share our stories. And, it's true. We spend so much time portraying this beautiful life on social media. And actually, what the best thing we can do for ourselves and everybody else is to say, actually, life isn't like that. Life is hard. And, a lot of us have addictions. We have depression. We have, anxiety. There's, because as soon as you realize that you're not alone, things are much, much easier. So that's been the great thing for me is making people realize that they really are not alone. It's a much bigger issue than any of us thought.
Yeah, fantastic. So the book is out now, and where can people find you if they want to read more about you? Would you like to send people to your blog or?
You can contact me via the blog, which is Mummy Was a Secret Drinker. And so just put that into Google and you'll find me. And I also have a Facebook page called Sober Mummy, and I post information and inspiration every day on that Facebook page. So whenever stuff comes up in the news, or, you know, there's something interesting, you know, an interesting podcast or whatever, I post it on there. So that's what I'm looking at too.
Claire, I really appreciate it. Thank you so much for being my guest, and thank you for writing such a fantastic book. It's amazing, and we look forward to whatever comes next for you. What are you writing next, by the way?
Well, I've written a novel, actually.
Excellent.
I realized how much I enjoyed writing, so I thought, I'm going to write a novel. And classically, there is an addict in the novel who has just given up. It's a man, and he's an alcohol and cocaine addict. And at the beginning of the book, he quits drinking and drugs. And so we see, you know, what happens to him next. And he's gorgeous.
When's that coming out? Do we know?
So I've written a novel. It's called The Authenticity Project. It's out next year. And it's coming out in 29 different languages, which is very exciting.
Fantastic. Well done, you. That's amazing. Well, we look forward to it. So Claire, thank you so much.
Thank you. I've really enjoyed talking to you, Janie,
always. It's great to talk to you. And we'll speak again soon. And I'll see you at the Mindful Drinking Festival.
Yeah, I'll see you on Saturday. Hurrah.
See you then. Cheers.
Bye.
The fabulous Claire Pooley, author of The Sober Diaries, and the paperback is out now. And along with the charity I'm working with, I've mentioned this before, our Stay Dry Till July campaign, in addition to the little self-care prizes and stuff that we're doing, we're going to be hosting free live events at a really cool bar in London, and we'll turn it into a dry bar for the evening. And we're hoping that Claire is going to be our first guest speaker. So listen up and watch Instagram for when that date is announced. It'd be lovely to have you there with us. So on to the self-care tip of the week then. I don't have a drum roll or anything, but this is a really, really big one. The tip is declutter your space. Now, how can that be a self-care tip? Well, you know, I think it is, because, you know, for me, I have to confess, I was, you know, I am a messy kind of girl. I always joke about having a floor drobe in my bedroom. And the truth of it is, when I was pouring wine on my head, you know, every night, there never seemed to be any brain space to tidy up and to declutter. But I would really encourage you, and pointing fingers back at me, to regularly try and do this. Clear out your cupboard or your closet, or even just, you know, one drawer that's getting cluttered. Because what I've learned over time is that it's an act of self-care. You know, it really, really is. And you will feel lighter afterwards, and you'll feel more optimistic. And it goes without saying, and I think this was one of Catherine Gray's top tips. Catherine, the author of The Unexpected Joy of Being Sober, one of her top tips for staying with your sobriety, if you like, and feeling better, is that if you've got bottles of booze stashed away in your home, declutter those. Get rid of them. Now, it can feel overwhelming, decluttering. And the best tip I've heard for that is to set a timer, set it for 20 minutes or 25 minutes. And in your mind, hire yourself. Just, you know, imagine you're paying yourself to do something really cool, and then blitz one area. But don't try and do the whole apartment, the whole home, because then it brings you back into overwhelm. If you just go for it for 20 minutes, and here's the really important bit, work hard, you know, get the job done, go after it for 20, 25 minutes, and then, and hear this bit, take it out, take out the trash. Take the stuff that you are giving to the charity shop, to the vintage store, to the thrift store. Take that back. Take that out straight away, because otherwise you just might be tempted to go rifle through those bags and reclaim that jumper that really doesn't fit you or doesn't flatter you anymore. So there's the top tip, declutter. Follow me on Instagram. Use the hashtag Stay Dry Till July. It's just at Jane Lee Grace. And share your best self-care tips or what it is that you love to do. It doesn't have to be anything totally unique, just little things. It's just lovely to be reminded. We'd love to hear your stories as well, your sober stories. So please email me. And as we are, you know, brand new really on this podcast, we would so appreciate it. I would so appreciate it if you would subscribe on iTunes and rate the show, and please share. and I'll see you next week. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast with Jamie Lee Grace. Please subscribe to us on iTunes, rate us, share on social media, and tune in again.